Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Hi there.
You send us your sources and, well, we're your guides. We dig in, pull out the most interesting bits, the important insights.
Yeah, basically give you a shortcut to being really well informed on something.
Exactly. And today, for our listener, the learner, who wants that knowledge without getting, you know, bogged down, we're exploring these website excerpts from Armasoft.
That's right. It's a personal website, and it gives this fascinating window into a musical life.
Right.
Really focused on organs, it seems, and the personal journey behind it all. We've got bits on early influences, instruments, church music.
Even getting into early music tech, I saw.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so let's dive in then. Our mission here is to really get a handle on this musical journey. What's behind the organ focus? What's the story? And it's all based on what this website tells us.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like the fascination started really young.
It really did. The site mentions a memory from being just 4 years old.
Four.
Wow. Yeah, captivated by the church organ at the CGK of Lee Warden. That's a local Christian Reformed church. Seems like that really planted a seed.
I can imagine. And it wasn't just listening, was it? He discovered he could play the harmonica by ear.
Yeah, which then led to his father getting him a better one, a Hohner. Huh. And he was apparently playing along with the music teacher at school, too.
It's interesting how these different early things feed into it. Even mentions a plastic harmonica from Santa Claus back in 58.
Right, and another Hohner in 59. It shows that early active engagement with making sounds, making music.
Definitely. And then there's a progression.
Well, yeah. From the harmonica, there's this interest sparked by his grandparents' harmonium around 1965.
Okay.
And then he actually got one himself in 1966.
So moving towards keyboards fairly early on.
Seems like it. These experiences kind of paved the way, you could say, for the later dedication to the organ.
And then came the first proper lessons with Joe Needham.
Mm-hmm. Who was, interestingly, a carpenter, but also played organ at the church in Franeker for, like, 50 years.
Huh. A dedicated amateur. But the website says he felt like he plateaued after a couple of years.
Yeah, it does suggest that. Makes you wonder about, you know, his learning style or what he was aiming for musically at that point.
Right. And before that, there was this moment with his grandmother.
Oh, yeah, that's quite telling. In Lou Warden, she taught him to play a hymn, Open U Mond, with just one finger.
Just one finger.
And apparently he played everything with one finger until about 1965.
That really shows a kind of self-starting approach, doesn't it? Figuring things out on his own.
Absolutely. An inherent drive, even before the structured lessons.
Then his mother steps in. She had had lessons during the war.
Yes, from someone named Shwitama. And she taught him two-handed scales on the harmonium.
That must have felt like a big leap forward from the one-finger method.
You'd think so. And it was that experience, the site suggests, that led to the idea of getting proper lessons.
Which brings us back to Jel Nydam. Interesting how family support played a role there.
Definitely. And then the story moves on to more structured lessons, starting late 68 with Mimji Visser.
Okay, who was he?
An organist at another church in Franeker, and apparently a student of George Stamm. So a bit more of a formal lineage there.
Right, focusing on scales.
Yeah.
Getting the technique down.
Exactly. Building that foundation.
And then a really big opportunity came up in 69, practicing on a proper pipe organ.
Yeah, a Pels organ in Amsterdam Noord. That's a significant step up instrument-wise.
Huge difference from a harmonium.
Oh, absolutely. And there's also a quick mention of practicing on the Decker organ back in Franeker in 68, too.
So he was already seeking out chances to play actual church organs even before Amsterdam.
Seems that way. Actively pursuing the instrument he was drawn to.
So if we're thinking about the learner, this early phase is really about what? Exploration.
I'd say exploration and this constant drive towards more complex keyboard instruments, from harmonica to harmonium to eventually these church organs.
Mixing formal and informal learning along the way.
Exactly. It's quite a foundation being laid.
Okay, so after the lessons and early practice, the focus shifts a bit to acquiring instruments. He got a Farfisa harmonium in 1970.
Mm-hmm. Described as high-polished, two keyboards, 13 stops for the pedal.
Sounds quite specific.
And it says it had an accordion-like sound. The detail suggests it made an impression.
And this is mainly for practice, right? Shows real dedication.
It does. And there's that great little detail about learning the pedals, practicing with headphones at relatives' houses that had electronic organs.
Huh. Resourceful. Keeping the peace, I suppose.
Definitely. Then came the first actual electronic organ, a Philicorda.
Which he initially thought was praktig.
Meaning beautiful, wonderful, yeah. It's interesting how our standards change as we learn more, isn't it?
Totally. What sounds amazing at first might seem limited later.
And we see that here. The list continues. Eminent 400, then a 500, a Ria Festivo, and a Selina SL.
And the website points out that the Eminent 500 and the Selina were considered higher quality.
Yes, more suitable for the music he wanted to play. It shows a growing discernment, a better ear for the sound he was after.
What really jumps out at me, though, is that after 1969, it seems the learning became very self-directed.
Mm-hmm. Buying organ records, then hunting down the sheet music in Lou Warden.
And spending months learning a single piece. That's incredible discipline.
It really is. Speaks volumes about the passion driving it all. Not just waiting for lessons, but actively seeking out the music and mastering it himself.
For the learner, that's a great example of how far self-teaching can take you when you're genuinely interested.
Absolutely. Intrinsic motivation is powerful.
And then there's that list of later keyboards and synths. For Fisa, Selina, Boom, Yamaha DXs, Roland, Content, more Yamahas, ending with a Viscount Duo in 2020.
We don't need to go through each one, but the list itself tells a story.
Yeah, a lifelong engagement with keyboard tech, constantly exploring new sounds.
Right. Following the evolution of the technology over decades.
Let's shift to the church organs and community side. There's a mention of the organ in Wormerveer being dismantled right after he got married in 74.
Yeah, the CGK Wormerveer. That must have been a big deal for the congregation.
Seems like it sparked quite a reaction. A community effort to raise money for a new one.
A lot of money, too. 40,000 guilders back then. The site mentions people working together at a local company, Alphenar Stanson, to help raise funds.
Wow, that really shows the value they placed on having an organ. Real community spirit.
Definitely. And during that interim period, he occasionally played a pedal harmonium for services.
Filling the gap. It's interesting how communities adapt musically.
Mm-hmm. Then the new organ arrived in 1975, a Flintrop, played by some notable organists over the years.
Right. Gep Ijs, Deb DeVries, Corky later on.
And it served the church for 25 years before being moved somewhere else when that specific church closed around 2000. Adds a bit of history to the instrument itself.
The website also briefly lists other church organs he was connected with in some way. Frenniker, Oosterbeerum,
Bossum, Huizen, yeah, along with some organist names. It paints a picture of someone connected to the church music scene in different places over time.
Suggests an ongoing involvement, even if just appreciating the instruments and music.
Exactly. But then we get to maybe the most remarkable part, building his own organ.
Yeah, the Dr. Boom FNT in 1978. That sounds like a monumental project.
It really does. A 3-keyboard organ built from a kit.
How long did that take?
The site says around 650 hours of work, 20,000 solder connections.
Whoa. That's serious dedication. More than just playing.
Oh, absolutely. It shows a deep interest in how the instrument actually works. The site even details the cost 13,000 guilders for parts, plus interest making it 18,000 total, and it estimates the shop value would have been double that.
Incredible. A huge undertaking, and built in about half a year.
August 78 to February 79, and apparently that organ is now in Belgium, so it's had its own journey since then.
That level of hands-on work is pretty rare, really understanding the mechanics.
It underscores a technical grasp alongside the musicality.
But then the narrative takes a bit of a turn. Estrangement from that Wormerveer congregation.
Yeah, it mentions stopping playing in services there for a while, though he kept practicing privately.
Hmm. It shows how personal life and community dynamics can impact your public musical activities.
It does. Relationships with music, especially within a community, aren't always smooth sailing. But the private practice shows the personal connection remains strong.
Thankfully, it wasn't the end of his church playing. He returned as organist at CGK Bussum in late 96.
Yes, after being back in church for a few months, required dedicated practice to get back into it, the site says.
So a cycle of engagement, pause, and re-engagement with church music.
Seems so. And currently, the site mentions playing on Yamaha PSR and CVP keyboards, bringing us up to the modern digital era.
Which is a perfect segue into the technological side. That Boom organ he built, it eventually became obsolete.
That's what the site indicates. The big shift from analog to digital technology caught up with it. That must have been a moment.
A sign of the times. And that leads to buying a Yamaha DX21 synthesizer in 84.
Right, marking that transition. And what's really interesting is how he immediately started connecting it to a computer, a Commodore 64.
Ahead of the curve there. Programming music to send to the synth.
Yeah. And then there's this project, inputting Bach's organ sonatas, note by note.
Which took... How long?
About 100 hours of work, it says, just painstakingly entering the data.
Wow. And then learning to play along with one hand against the computer playback. That's dedication.
It really is. Adapting traditional, complex repertoire to the brand new digital tools.
And this was early days for MIDI, the musical instrument digital interface.
Very early. He embraced it, even though the programming knowledge was limited and a lot of the software was foreign.
Sounds like a real challenge.
He even mentioned studying chip data sheets to figure out how to send all the Commodore music data to the synth.
He calls it a prestige pioneer stage, a wonderful pioneering time.
You can feel the excitement in that description, can't you? The thrill of figuring out this new technology.
Definitely. A real enthusiasm for bridging the old music with the new tech.
It shows that willingness to get technical, to understand the nuts and bolts, whether it's soldering an analog organ or programming a synth.
Finally, the website has those favorite links, favorite organ builders.
Yeah, Betzwit, Blank. Composers like Bach, Handel, Weidor, Jansworth.
And organists Martin Manns, Fike Asma, Corky.
It gives us a good map of his musical influences and tastes, the kind of tradition he admires.
And lists various churches, too, grounding the story geographically.
Mm-hmm. CGK Bussum, Franeker, Heisen, Wormerveer. And there's that little note about a sound analysis link needing updates.
Suggests an ongoing interest in the technical side of sound, even now.
Absolutely. Those links, even needing an update, tie together the instrument makers, the composers, the players, and the places where the music happens. It's a nice summary of his world.
So bringing this deep dive into the Armasoft site to a close, what have we really seen?
Well, it's clearly a lifelong passion for music, isn't it? With the organ right at the center.
A journey that mixes self-teaching, formal lessons, that incredible hands-on organ building.
And a real willingness to embrace new technology as it came along, from analog synths to MIDI and computers.
For you, the learner, it really shows how that deep personal interest can just fuel decades of learning and adapting.
Absolutely. And what really stands out, I think, is the Boom Organ Project. 650 hours.
Yeah, that's extraordinary.
It highlights a level of engagement that's just way beyond simply playing. And then there's that early dive into MIDI and computers.
A real pioneer spirit.
It makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Considering this whole journey, how does that deep personal passion interact with the willingness or even the need to grapple with technology when you're trying to master an art form today?
How does technology reshape our relationship with traditional skills and arts? That's definitely something to ponder.